This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have made it. The long off season is over. It is draft day 2024. Gather around the televisions watch till your eyes fall out of your head.
While I am so excited that this is draft day, I'm going to miss the content. I got to admit it.
What are you talking about? We can talk about what happened in the draft for the next 2 weeks.
Open up the phones to Bills fans, and man, oh man, just come along for the ride. Right off the top, our question is, who's your guy? Who are you going to pick? Call us.
And
who are you going to pick,
and
how is that going to happen? I mean, if we're going to pick Marvin Harrison Jr., how are we going to do that? And have both sides of the trade. What do we got to give up to go up to number four to get Marvin Harrison Jr., or whatever, whoever your heart's desire is? What are we going to have to give up to get him?
Mm-hmm.
See if you can do it. Who's your guy? If you stay put, there's about, I don't know, Brownie, five guys, six guys that I could live with.
Who's your number one person?
Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah.
He's there. These be the best receiver that's got a chance at making it that low. But I don't think he's going to be there now that, you get this.
Contraire, mon frère.
A lot of people have mocked him
to us. The last few days, more and more of the mock drafts have him sliding down the board. Maybe it's because of the shoulder injury.
He ain't going to slide.
I think he's going to be a little lower than people originally thought. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, people were like, he'll be gone by 13, 14, 15's the floor. And now we're seeing him go all the way to 28 to Buffalo.
He ain't going to make it to 28.
Hold on a second. Here are the things that I think are working in favor of him sliding.
All right.
Okay?
Convince me.
Number one is if quarterbacks go 1 through 4,
okay,
which is a possibility if Arizona moves out, that automatically delays receivers coming off the board when anticipated. So it starts the run later on the top three.
Right.
Number two.
So you're talking those top three. So then if you go through number four, you got 5 through 28. That's how many is that? 23 picks where you've got to get all the way down through, and five of those have got to be wideouts, at the fifth one being 28.
Mm-hmm.
That could happen.
There is a good chance three edge rushers go before 28.
Hold on.
Put five quarterbacks.
Five QBs.
Because we know five are going to go before the Bills pick at 28.
There's five quarterbacks.
Okay.
Go ahead. Keep going.
Three edge rushers.
Three edge. Okay.
One defensive tackle.
One DT.
Possibly two, but we'll say one for now.
One.
And then I think you're looking at...
How many offensive tackles?
Seven.
Oh, seven?
Yep.
That's a big number. You're still shy, though.
And then
that's
16. After that... Put in the three top receivers.
Right, there's three.
Give me the tight end.
One tight end.
And give me three corners.
Three. All right, hold on. Three corners.
Now add that up. Tell me what we've got.
I'm going to be 14, 15, 23.
23. Brian Thomas is now in striking distance. And I'm going to tell you this right now. I think the Bills are going to make a small move up. I think this draft is going to play out a lot like the 2022 draft did for the Bills, when everybody under the sun knew Buffalo needed cornerback help, and they needed it early. The Bills jumped up, I want to say, two spots, if I remember right, to get Kaiir Elam. I think they're going to be in a similar situation in terms of where they have to move on the board to get the guy they want, not because receiver talent's running out, but because they have a drop-off. It's my belief they have a drop-off between Brian Thomas and the next tier. That's my belief. I don't know that. I don't have any inside information on that.
Right.
That's just what my gut is telling me. And so I think as soon as Brian Thomas slides, I thought 2 weeks ago and most of this week I was saying, oh, boy, as soon as Brian Thomas gets past the Colts at 15, who I believe are going to take a corner. Brandon Bean's on the phone, and he's working the phone. So that doesn't mean he's going to trade up to 16,
right?
But he's going to start there and work his way down and see what the cost is. And I don't know if he's got to get that high based on a lot of this late. Daniel Jeremiah, Brian Thomas at 28.
Yeah.
At 28. And then you've got Pete Prisco, CBS Sports, Brian Thomas at 28. They're not even moving.
Right.
Okay? And there's like two other mock drafts. Brian Thomas at 28. And what is precipitating this mock, you know, choice for the Bills is the offensive tackle competition.
Right.
They are going to be out for blood to get pass protectors because the vast majority of this league doesn't have any good ones.
Right.
Bills are in the fortunate position where they don't have to address that.
One of the unpredictable part about this particular draft and the order and the teams that have multiple firsts like Chicago, Minnesota, the problem is this draft, and I know it happens every draft, but this draft in particular, there's a ton of expectation about trades up in the top 10. In and out, up and down, about teams way ahead of Buffalo. That, to me, muddies the water for being able to anticipate how this is going to go once you get into the 20s. Because Minnesota may not have either of their first picks. They may take a guy, they may use both those first round picks, the 12 and the 20, not the 12, the 11 and the 23, and move way up like Buffalo did to get Josh, move up to where like the Giants are. If the Giants don't get a quarterback or if their quarterback's off the board, the Giants may trade with Minnesota and let them go up and get a guy they want, whatever. But there's a lot of expectation that the teams at the top of this draft, well, outside the top three, and even New England at three, have been rumored to say, listen, we're open for business. We'll listen to what you have to say. So to me, there's a ton of teams that are saying, okay, what about it? To all those teams, from New England to Cardinals, the Chargers, and the Giants, those four, from three through six, have been rumored a lot. Now, Tennessee is a lot of people thinking they're not going anywhere. They're staying right where they're at. Atlanta, same thing. But Chicago, that pick might be up for grabs. You got four teams between three and six, three, four, five, and six that may get a king's ransom for that draft spot. And that's a lot of anticipation about that coming up to this draft. So that throws a wrench into everything. I don't know if, you know, and I don't think they're going to trade in a top 10 for a tackle. You can trade back and get a good tackle in this draft. There's a ton of them.
There is another development, which I think has, for all intents and purposes, ruled out the possibility of the Bills trading back going into the second round. And the reason why is CBS Sports' Jonathan Jones, who is their NFL insider, is reporting that a fast and furious run on receivers will take place early in the second round, where you could see 5 to 7 come off the board in the first 10 picks. And because teams on the back end of that run sense that, they will be looking to move into the bottom of round one. So if the Bills at 28 don't like their receiver value, too bad. Because if you move back, you're not getting the guy you want right in the next tier because the run is going to start right behind you. And you better be careful that somebody doesn't come from 33 like Carolina, who has picked 33 and 39, and leapfrogs you at 27 or 26.
Here's the thing, too. Buffalo, the most you and I think they'll probably try and get Brian Thomas Jr. They may be able to get up to, like what we said, 23 to do that. If that's off the table, I'm still okay with A.D. Mitchell. I'm still okay with even Ladd McConkey or Xavier Leggett. Those three guys. Give me any of them, and I'm okay at 28 because they all got the traits. They all have the production that I'm looking for. Certainly, Leggett's got the traits without the production, as much production. But the other two guys, Brian Thomas Jr. and McConkey, they're plug and play to me. And even in this lineup with Josh and the playoff team. So I'm okay. And if they stay put, I'm fine with it. And I think the biggest I've been saying it for 2 weeks. The most I expect is maybe to go up a couple of spots, maybe to 23 at the most, to get a guy. That's
my call.
Carolina
Panthers with pick 33 and 39 can get as high as 25.
There you go.
That's a problem.
Yes.
And you need to watch out for that.
And their owner is hyper-competitive.
And they need Bryce Young to work. They need it to work. Yeah. He's the first pick in the draft last year. And they've done some work to help him out and, you know, make NFL quarterbacking a little bit easier for him. They acquired Deontay Johnson from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So he'll be, you know, the possession receiver, but they need a stud outside guy too. Now, maybe they think they're okay to sit there at pick 33 because they believe Xavier Leggett will still be there, and there's right. Your big outside target.
Sure.
That's a possibility.
Or A.D. Mitchell or any of these guys.
But if the run, you know, starts early or they're worried about getting leapfrogged, that could precipitate trades into the bottom of the first round. I'm just going to read what Jonathan Jones describes here. He says, as Thursday's first round gets into the 20s, watch for teams to potentially slide back or up into the first round to get a receiver. Forget the ability to have the fifth-year option on a first-round pick. This is more about making sure teams get their guy before a run on receivers in the top of the second round. Carolina, New England, Arizona, Washington, and the Chargers are currently at the top of the second round. All five could take a receiver. So if there's some late first-round movement, it's likely to be for a wideout. You got to watch your back if you're the Bills at 28 tonight.
Right, and think about this. Detroit just paid their boy Amon-Ra St. Brown, and he deserved it. The Ravens, OBJ's not there anymore. They're going to need a body. San Francisco, you don't think Xavier Leggett looks exactly like Deebo Samuel to them? And the Chiefs, what position do you think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to take?
Well, I'm hoping offensive tackle because they need one.
No.
Their left tackle is a free agent. He has not been re-signed, and their right tackle might as well be a bag full of leaves because he can't do it over there.
And they won a Super Bowl with him. They're not doing anything except getting Pat some help because Rashee Rice isn't going to be playing for him.
Probably for four games, yeah.
At least. So they need somebody to keep their fans from burning the stadium down. They need to take a weapon for Pat Mahomes.
I don't think anybody's burning the stadium down for a three-time Super Bowl champion in the last 5 years. I think they're okay. Just call me crazy, but I think they'll be all right.
Kansas City champ fans, though. I grew up out there, man. They don't have long memories. I'm telling you, the Chiefs want a weapon for Pat Mahomes. They want a guy like that.
Yeah, it's conceivable. It's definitely in the realm of possibility. I agree. So I think it's a tackle or a receiver.
It could be, but at the top of the second round, yeah, people are going to be standing.
You got to watch out.
People are going to be standing in line.
One of those teams might get antsy and try to come up into the bottom of the first and grab somebody. So I think the Bills at 28 have to watch their back as much as what's happening in front of them so they don't get leapfrogged. And so that's why I'm anticipating that Brandon Bean takes at least a small move up the board, you know, maybe as high as Philly at 22, although now there's talk that Philly wants to move up to get a corner. They want to get one of the top two corners. So I don't know what it is, but I have a sense there's going to be a lot of movement right from the jump here in this draft tonight.
I think so, too.
Because of the quarterback demand, because of the offensive tackle demand, and then later in the round, based on what CBS Sports' Jonathan Jones is reporting, based on the receiver demand at the top of the second round, it's likely that some teams are not going to want to wait until tomorrow.
There's going to be a lot of guys there. I mean, this is a wide receiver-heavy draft. And I'll say this, too, not for nothing. We've seen how being a high pick in the NFL draft affects some players and because of the immediate opportunity that maybe they're not ready for, or, you know, that it changes things, right? I mean, if you're a top NFL draft pick, the perception of you is changed. You're the one that's out in front of the fans the next day. You're the one that's in town. You're the one that gets the private jet. You're the one that comes out. You're the one that's training. You're the one that's in front of the media. You're the one that has a press conference. You're the one that speaks. If you're a fifth rounder, there's a lot of people who won't even recognize you. And when you get a wide receiver who's going to be a skilled guy, it really works well for them if they're not the face of that draft, the way Dalton Kincaid was this last year for the Bills, the way Sammy Watkins was for the Bills. You can go down the list. We've all seen it. The guys, the next day, whoever the Bills draft at 28, if indeed they do, or if they trade up, whoever that is, we're going to see him the next day. He's going to be in Buffalo. That's a lot of pressure for a lot of guys. And some of them handle it great. They expect it. It's no big deal. And they, you know, they're well-adjusted. No problem. It's just, you know, part of the deal. Other guys, not so much, you know. So this run of receivers, you get skilled guys. It's nice to have some guys with some traits that don't have to have that pressure on them as being a wide receiver with just a, you know, with a, whatever situation they have at quarterback or any of that stuff. So I like the thought that in the second round there's going to be a run on receivers. It makes a lot of sense psychologically for that position. You know, let the guy build up to that expectation rather than
right,
just throw it on.
Right, but at the same time, I think it only accentuates the fact that the Bills have to get a guy, and they probably have to get him tonight.
Because
there were some people, and we were in this camp, like, oh, you know, if you don't get a guy in the first round, you know, maybe at pick 60, or maybe if you make a small move up from 60, you can still get a quality player. Sounds like the pool is going to be thinned rather quickly at the start of night two of the draft, at the top of the second round, and what you thought might be there at 60 might be a bare cupboard now. So I think it has only intensified the need for the Bills to get a bona fide receiver that can help them immediately as soon as his feet hit the ground in Buffalo, in between the lines on a practice field.
You can bet this receiver, I think, well, we've said it, I think he's going to have some traits. He's going to be a big, strong, fast-looking
guy. That is Brandon
guy.
Bean's history in round one with picks.
We'll see. Now, there's, you know, there's, except even the guys we're talking about, the only one that probably wouldn't have elite traits would be McConkey. But he's 6 foot, runs a 4.41. Catches everything, really get open guy. So he's probably got as high a floor as anybody in this draft class. So
Worthy's only elite trait is his speed.
Right. He's just an okay route runner, just an okay catcher. So I think this is a spot where you can bet whoever the Bills pick is going to look the part.
Who do you have the Bills taking with their first round pick in tonight's NFL draft, and how is it going to happen? You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. And we lead off today with Tim down in North Carolina. What do you got for us, Tim?
Hey, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Sure.
Draft day's finally here. We finally made it. but I think the Bills are going up for one of the top three wide receivers. The reason that I think that is kind of twofold, the first one being I really just don't think that Brandon Bean makes a trade with Stephon Diggs without having some type of plan. I think there was at least a week or maybe two based on his press conference between when Steph kind of asked. I mean, he didn't come right out and say that Steph asked for a trade, but, you know, we kind of knew that that was maybe the case. And then him also executing the deal. So I really think that during that 2 week, 1 week to 2 week period, he had it all figured out. It does take two to tango, but some milestones where we could watch. Six, if the Giants aren't able to trade up for their guy. Nine with the Bears. They need draft picks bad. Denver's a spot at 12, and then Seattle at 16 before the main jump that we think with, like, the Bengals and stuff like that. So that's my number one reason that I think that the Bills are going up is because I don't think Brandon Bean makes that trade without a backup plan there. And then number two is it solidified it the other day with that Brown extension with the Lions. I mean, if he's out here getting $30 million a year, like, what is that going to look like for, you know, I don't know. Trade the picks, go up, get your guy, cost-controlled five-year option. Like, right. Control your own destiny, go get your guy. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, I would agree with your second point, Tim, chiefly. We were talking about that on the show yesterday. As soon as Amon-Ra St. Brown got $30 million a year, I think it severely dampened the trade market for Brandon Ayuk. Now, I'm not saying it's not going to happen, because there might be some team out there desperate enough to add him to their roster and pay him $30 million a year or something close to it. I know his numbers didn't quite match those of Amon-Ra St. Brown, but they weren't far off. So I think seeing that contract and that money on average annual value is going to give pause to some teams that are going to say, well, hold on a second. I'm going to give up potentially a first-round draft choice and to acquire this receiver, who's a proven commodity in the NFL, but it's going to also cost me $30 million a year for the next 4 years. I've got the best receiver class maybe ever staring me in the face with cost control labor for the next 4 years if I take a first rounder, you know, or 5 years if I take a first rounder, 4 years if I take a second or a third rounder. Like, if I don't think the projection is that far off on one of these kids, I'm not going to do all that work to get Ayuk signed to a contract extension that's going to dramatically impact my salary cap. So I think the trade market for Ayuk was hurt by that contract yesterday.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that right. It just it was kind of hurt by the fact when Tyreek did his deal. You knew that was the bar, and that you can bet.
Yeah, but that was like the stratosphere contract.
Right.
Now you've got other people making $30 million, and that's the problem.
But that's why St. Brown said that's the number. That's the number.
Right.
And so if Ayuk comes out and he doesn't have to even hit that, it doesn't matter if it's $30 million. It could be 25. Oh my gosh. That's still a huge contract. So he just gets within shouting distance of that, and it's still a chilling effect on the league.
Right. But I just think that if Tyreek remained the only $30 million a year player as we go into this draft weekend with nobody else signing and someone's interested in Ayuk, I think there are some that believe, well, maybe we can get Ayuk for 27 and a half, you know, maybe 28. And now with St. Brown now joining the $30 million club, now you know what Ayuk is going to be asking for, and it's not going to be anything south of 28 and a half. And maybe you were saying, oh, man, I thought we could have got Ayuk for maybe 26, maybe 27. Now we're going to be close to 30, and I don't know if we can swing that. I don't know if it's worth it, more importantly.
That's right. That's right. Particularly when you're looking at a draft class like this one, it's like, I don't know.
And then,
you know,
trading up into the top 10 for Odunze, look, I think we'd all be super excited if it happened, but man, is that going to take a lot. It's going to take an awful lot to do it. And
it's going to take two ones.
And here's the thing that has me feeling Brandon Bean is not pulling the trigger on a deal of that magnitude. Since he got here, the philosophy for him and Sean McDermott has been to be perennial contenders, not to, you know, shoot your shot in 1 year and load up for bear and try to win it all in 1 year and then pay the piper the next year, tear it down, and start rebuilding again. He wants to stay at that top-tier competitive level year over year over year over year, because if you keep getting swings at it, eventually you'll get that Super Bowl title. But if you're up here 1 year putting all your eggs in one basket and then you're down again and you're not going to contend and then you got to climb back up again and do it this way and then you go for it again, he would rather stay up here in the upper tier of contender status, and sometimes you can't shoot all your bullets out of your gun in one off season. I think we all realize the gigantic hole that's there, but I think with this class, there are alternatives that are attractive enough to keep Brandon Bean from mortgaging the future farm just to get a Odunze. I could be wrong. Maybe he says the hell with it. Let's swing big, and maybe he does. But based on all of the things that he has said about their philosophy as an organization, I just think it's too steep a hill to climb.
Yeah, and we've never seen him trade away a future one, and that's what it would take to get that done.
Yeah.
You'd have to trade this year's one, next year's one, and probably a two next year, one of the twos, probably the high one, if you really wanted to do it fully. And that's Minnesota's two, which is probably going to be like a 34 through 38 pick.
Yeah.
You know, next year, if I'm transposing what their expectations are with a rookie quarterback and a down year anticipated for them, they'll be at the top of the second round. That's the number two pick that the Bills get. If you know, so you're talking this year's one at 28, next year's one at whenever it is, and next year's two from Minnesota, which is a high two, to get Rome Odunze or get into the neighborhood of one of those top three guys.
Yeah.
You may have your pick between Neighbors and Odunze if you go to the right team. If it's six, if it's the Giants, and they'll do it for you, but, which they're not going to do.
And that's the other thing. I think what people are forgetting is they're too focused on where the Bills need to get, and they're not thinking about what that other team may or may not want right. to do. To go from 9 to 28 is a huge drop, and there is an enormous amount of talent that's going to come off the board. And knowing you were up there, and now they're asking you to go down there – I don't know that there are going to be many teams that can stomach that.
Particularly if two of the three picks you're giving up are next year.
People want capital this year.
They want it this year because there's no guarantee that GM will be there next year. But now a team like Tennessee, who's just switched over all that stuff, Tennessee at 7, they may listen to you because, all right, we're going to have a little bit of a grace period this year, and it'd be great to have this ammo next year, the two picks. We'll drop back. And we'll take pick 28. We're going to be able to get a really good offensive tackle at 28 as well. Let's do it and get three picks for this and get a one next year. We'll have two ones and a two next year. We'll have two twos and two ones next year, our own and the Bills. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have a better sense of where Will Levis is. So Tennessee might be the spot to jump up to. At 7,
that's
if you're going to do that.
Ransom.
But that's a lot of draft capital. And you're going to cripple yourself for this draft and the next.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to do it. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Got open lines for you. So chance for you to get on board. We go to Thomas in Buffalo next. What's up, Thomas?
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all feeling?
Good.
I'm good. Like y'all, I'm excited about tonight, too, and I hope we get the receiver that we want. And thank you for making that point earlier because I had no idea that St. Brown got that contract extension because that kind of killed my point about trading for Ayuk now because, like you said, because of that contract.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking, what about T. Higgins? Because I'm like, that's an option too. But I'm hoping the one scenario plays out is the one y'all talked about earlier that Brian Thomas does fall to us. I'm hoping that happens. But if it doesn't, like you said, I'm up for us trading up to get the best receiver as we possibly can.
Yeah, that would be the ideal scenario, right, Thomas? Because you're not parting with any draft capital. The board falls exactly the way you need it to, and you get a top-tier receiver or maybe the first guy and only guy in the second tier in this class in Brian Thomas. That would be the ideal scenario. T. Higgins, according to the Cincinnati Bengals, is not available for trade, even though he requested to be traded. So, too, did Trey Hendrickson, their number one pass rusher, who's fed up with the situation there and not getting an extension and all this stuff. And let me just tell you, this isn't the first time this has happened in Cincinnati. But basically, the top tier of the talent on that roster is already splintering. T. Higgins, now Hendrickson, and ownership has a history of not paying top dollar for their players, with few exceptions. Quarterback, and then maybe next year they pay Jamar Chase. But Higgins, not available for trade because the Bengals want to try to run at the Super Bowl one more time with their current roster. That includes Higgins, and then next year they'll figure it out. So I don't think he's available for trade either. That is the problem. You've got guys on fifth-year options. I think Ayuk has a good chance to get moved, but I think the number of teams interested are going to be far fewer because of the contract we just told you about with St. Brown, and Higgins is supposed to be playing there in 2024. He said as much on a recent podcast. My expectation is I will be playing in Cincinnati in 2024.
And he probably will be. Yeah. So you're not getting T. Higgins out of Cincinnati this year. Your best bet and the most likely thing to happen is the Bills are going to get some wide receiver help, probably multiple wide receivers in this draft. It's going to be off the list we've been talking about for a month and a half, 2 months. And they're also probably going to get some guys we have not talked about so much later in the later rounds of this draft. How it's going to happen at the top is dependent on the teams ahead of Buffalo. That's what it is. And behind, I guess, too, if somebody's going to leapfrog the Bills. But that's what it's going to be. And that's really, for me, the only question. What happens ahead of the Bills that changes things for them?
Break time for us here, but more of your phone calls when we return. We'll lead off with Ryan in West Seneca and others holding an 803-0550. Who is your player for the Bills in round one, and how is it going to happen? You let us know next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, where we are asking you today, who is your pick for the Bills in round one, and how is it happening? Are the Bills making a move to get your guy? What is going on? How is it taking place? You let us know at 803-0550. Back to the phones, and we lead off with Ryan in West Seneca. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
You guys were just talking about Kansas City burning down. I think the Bills stadium is going to burn down with us Bills fans if we don't take somebody to help out Josh Allen, you know, getting a wide receiver, especially with all the turnovers and the captains that we lost this year. And I just think they need to do something for like our psyche. I think Brandon Bean needs to be a mover and a shaker. I don't think going all the way up to get the top three is the way to go. My guys were always Brian Thomas. I like Leggett. I like McConkey. I think Thomas is something that is doable. And, you know, I mean, you're probably, to me, I think you're looking at like the 20 to 22 range for him. And, you know, you wouldn't have to give up crazy amounts of capital to get that. If you like Leggett, you like McConkey, you're pretty much probably going to stay there, you know, or right where you are. Mm-hmm. But then, like you said, you're worried about, people moving up from the beginning of the second round. So, us closet GMs, you know, my biggest brain thing was I actually wanted to move out and go, and get, you know, like, Carolina, get it like a 39, you'll have your 60, and then, to get the third round pick again, yeah. You know, in the beginning of the third, that was like my biggest thing. But then you reported about this, that run could happen and yeah. You might miss out on the guy that we like. And it's like, it's so, you know, the biggest thing I really want though is, you know, last year was the tight end draft, right? You know, it was tight end. It wasn't really a position of need for us, but it was strong. This is a wide receiver draft. So I hope they dip their toe in there twice and, you know, go get your guy in the first, you know, don't move back now because with all these reports. But I hope he does move around and gets a third. I think there's enough. We have a couple fours. We got three fives, sixes. I think there's enough capital to get into the third round again and maybe dip your toe in because I really like Roman Wilson in the third round. I like McCaffrey. You know, I forgot what his first name
Luke,
was. But,
Luke, yeah.
Yeah, Luke, yeah. I like these guys, and I think that could help out too. You know what I mean? But dip your toe into that yep. water twice.
All right, thanks, Ryan. We got to move along. Yeah. We got other people waiting. As we said in the last segment, I think trading down is not a good idea, especially if you don't like the value at receiver at 28. It's going to get even worse if you move back because of the anticipated run at the top of the second round and maybe some teams even trying to leapfrog into the bottom of round one to get the receiver that they want to beat that anticipated run on wideouts in round two.
By a value chart, you could take all three of the fifth rounders – you know, the 144, 160, 163, and you could get into the bottom of the third.
And let's not forget, Brandon Bean was ticked when they got jobbed out of a third-round compensatory pick by the league.
Yeah.
They were only awarded a four. Wanted to be in that round, so there might be some impetus there.
If they take all three of those fifth-rounders they've got, they could get back into just ahead of where the compensatory third-rounders are, right at the end of the third. So if it's there to do, you're right. They do have some collateral in the back of the rounds that could do it, but they would cost them three players to get one. And when you start talking about it like that, that's four swings, three swings at getting a guy like, you know, a Khalil Shakir or a Christian Benford or a Taron Johnson or, late round successes.
Yeah.
Now, certainly the one guy you do pick is a guy you really think is going to be that. but you're also picking the other guys for that same reason too. So later on, yeah, I'm with you. You know, Ryan. Yeah, Ryan. I think the most likely scenario is that Brandon trades up a couple of spots. But, I mean, you may be right. People won't be happy if they don't take a wide receiver, some help for Josh in this draft. But if all those guys are off, if Brian Thomas Jr. is gone, if McConkey's gone, if Worthy's gone, if Mitchell's gone, what are you going to do?
Probably taking an edge.
You're going to take an edge? There. You're going to take Leatu Leatu because he'll be there because other guys are took up some spots.
Yeah, you would think.
I mean, there's because, you know, if they're going to take nine receivers ahead of you at 28.
Although Leatu, they're talking about maybe leapfrogging the second best pass rusher. I mean, Dallas Turner was being booked as a lock, the pass rusher out of Alabama in the eight hole for Atlanta. And now they're talking about Atlanta moving out of there, which would change that dynamic, number one. And then Jared Verse was expected to go somewhere between 10 and 20. And now people are talking about Leatu maybe going as early as 10 or 11.
So what if one of those three falls to you at 28? Well, then he's like, well, okay, maybe you do. Certainly, and I've said it before, given what we saw from Kansas City last year and given what we know about Josh Allen, he's got enough weapons for this offense to beat anybody on any given Sunday, no question about it. You know, if you want an extra cherry on the cake of your offensive roster, okay, that's what you're going to get with one of these guys. But they're still, with or without one of these guys, they're going to be good. But it would make all of us feel good if they, you know, replaced Steph Diggs with somebody other than just Curtis Samuel. And I'm going to say, I'm not, no disrespect for Curtis.
The question after this draft is, they might be good, but is their good not as good as it used to be because everybody else has armed themselves with receiver talent?
Now, Kansas City did it. And maybe the Bills will zig when everybody expects them to zag, and maybe they'll take a corner and they'll take an edge rusher and they'll take, you know, maybe all of a sudden they look like Kansas City and Sean McDermott's going to call the plays or Bobby Babbage's going to call the defensive plays, and now all of a sudden they're like Kansas City and their defense steps up and is a top defense in the league and scoring and all that stuff. Maybe they're going to zig when everybody zags, but, man, that would that be a shocker? Yes, absolutely.
Let's go to Chuck in Hamburg next. What's up, Chuck?
Chris, Steve, how are you guys today?
Good, good, good.
I don't think it really matters who we take or at what number round because these guys are going to have a learning curve when they come into the pro set. They've been playing against college guys for years. It'll be a huge learning curve for anybody who they pick. Steve, weather's getting better. See you out in East Aurora, man.
All right, man. Thanks, Chuck. Yeah. There will be a little bit of a learning curve. And I'll say this, too, about football. It's different than basketball because basketball, these guys play against each other when they're in high school. You know, the distillation process of the talent in basketball is that you can get three guys and go play three on three and pick up and go. You can't do that in football. So in basketball, you get high school and college players that do scrimmage and play against pro guys. They practice against them, work with them. So they know how they measure up. You do not know how these guys are going to measure up at the pro level. You just don't. There are too many variables. You don't know which type of pro athlete he's going to be competing against. Is it going to be a big physical corner? Is it going to be a small, fast corner? Is it going to be whatever, whatever? So, yeah, there is a big learning curve, and there is a little bit of a let's wait and see how he does approach to this. But most of these guys at the top of the round have the tools to win against anybody. Now, they may not have it between their ears yet, but that's an adjustment. We'll have to wait and see how long it takes, and it'll take a different amount of time for each guy.
Let's go to Stan in Buffalo next. What do you got for us, Stan?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call again today. I'm still to the point where, you know, I don't know what it'll cost us, but like you guys are saying, it depends what goes on before us and at the top. I mean, there was talk of 8 or 9 receivers going in the first round. I personally think that you're probably looking at legitimately 5 going in the first round. You know, you're going to have that offensive tackle. You're going to have 4 or 5 quarterbacks. You're going to have a bunch of different positional players, DNs, D tackles. They're going to go. So I think if we can go up and get Neighbor and somehow he drops to 8 or 9, in my opinion, I'd rather have him than Ondunze. And if he doesn't drop that low to go get him, I think we'd look to get into the 18-20 mark and get Brian Thomas. And then I'm wondering if you guys think if our 1 this year, Minnesota's 2 next year, a 4 and a 5 this year gets us that position and a three this year.
All right.
I don't think you're getting a three back.
Okay.
I just don't. I don't see it. And the reason why, Stan, is because a lot of what you're giving in terms of your best draft capital is from next year. And that's the rub. That's why I think it's going to be – not only are you giving up a lot for the future, I don't think it's as attractive as the capital some other teams could offer from this year. A lot of people, when they're giving up a top 10 pick this year, they want draft capital in return from this year. And the Bills can't offer a whole lot of that. So I think it's going to be supremely difficult for them to do that. Of course, the other option is to put a player in the trade and do that, but there are teams that can't take on salary. So I think that's the fly in the ointment for the Bills for making a big move up the board. I'm not ruling it out. I'm not saying Brandon Bean can't make it happen. But for my money, I think most of these teams in the top 10 are going to be looking for premier draft capital in return in this year's draft. And the fact is the Bills just don't have a whole lot of that.
I don't know. It might be a little too complicated and you'd have to get somebody to bite. But if you took this year's one, next year's two from Minnesota, and if you give it the commensurate value they have this year, and then give them two of your fifth-round picks, two of your, you know, name whichever one, 144, 160, 163, either any of those, that would get you up to – that would get you up to, let's see, yeah, that'd get you up to 3-6. That'd get you up to 10.
Yeah, he wanted to get to 7 or 8. I don't know if that's happening.
That's, you're just shy. You're just shy of it.
And that's giving away the farm.
And that's giving away this year's one, one of next year's twos, and two fives this year. So you give away three picks this year and a pick next year to get up to inside the top 15.
We have to take a break, but more of your phone calls when we come back. So if you're holding at 803-0550, stay where you are. We'll get to you. Who do you have the Bills taking with their first pick, and how are they getting it done? You let us know at 803-0550. We're back in a flash here on Draft Day on One Bills Live. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Going to get right back to the phones where we are asking you, who is your pick for the Bills on night one of the draft, and how are the Bills getting them? Do they have to make a move somewhere on the board to make it happen for you? Let's go to Rick in Kenmore next. What's up, Rick?
Hey, curious, a couple statements and observations. Because I don't think that, you know, the fact that Buffalo doesn't have a third-round pick is going to be a lot harder for Bean to navigate the early part of this draft.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's my opinion of that. If he wants to, whatever he does, however it goes, it's fine, you know. But I just think without that third-round pick, it's not going to be as easy for him. Secondly, I was kind of like 50-50 before the Diggs trade as far as whether they would draft an offensive or defensive player first overall. After the Diggs trade, of course, you know, I'll lean towards a wide receiver, you know. And it's basically a known fact that, you know, I watch pretty much all the time and listen, whatever. It's that Chris Brown has a man crush on one Brian Thomas. That's fine. The first thing I ever read on that was Walter Football, and it wasn't very flattering. Everything since then has been basically more positive. And what counts the most is I recently heard that Josh Allen thinks very highly of him. So, you know, that's a good nod in Brian Thomas's direction as far as that goes. Second of all, a while back, Steve said that he was not really – he was against or thought that the Chicago Bears, them drafting Caleb Williams, would flop with the, you know, by them picking him at quarterback. Well, most recently, Mike Robb agreed with Steve, and there's a select few others that do agree with him also. I do not. I totally disagree with that. I think that Caleb Williams will be every bit as good, if not better, than Justin Fields was. And I like Justin Fields, for that matter, you know. I really did. And finally, there's two receivers in the draft that I kind of really have a question about.
Yeah.
One of them is Roman Wilson from Michigan. He's slightly under news. I don't hear his name mentioned very often as far as what his how he might pan out. And there's another guy that the Bills have on their top 30 visit. His name is Ryan Flournoy,
And I know Elliot mentioned him yesterday, and it's like, I don't know, you know, I don't know anything about him at all. I kind of wonder about what his potential might be. And, you know, as far as what I just said, you can do what you want with it, and I thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure thing, Rick. Yeah, I mean, I'll just say this. I like Roman Wilson. He projects, at least for me, as a slot receiver in the NFL because he's 5'10", 186, runs a 4.39. He's got a lot of the same traits. He's a poor man's Ladd McConkey. That's kind of what he is. He's got explosion off the line, kind of like pitter-patter type style to his route running to separate in coverage. But sure-handed, he can work open for the quarterback on off-script plays, which would happen from time to time because McCarthy would be back there for Michigan buying some time. He's not going to break tackles after the catch, though, because he's just too diminutive in size. But the kid makes an effort to find the first down marker, and he had a senior season where he exploded. I mean, 12 touchdowns this past season after having 10 total his previous 3 years. He's a late day two, early day three pick, as far as I see him. That's kind of where he comes in. And then as far as Flournoy is concerned, he's way down the list. I mean, he is a day three prospect. 6'1", 202, ran a 4.44 40, gigantic hands, 10 and an eighth inch, even though he's only 6'1", lined up to the field and the boundary and in the slot for Southeast Missouri State. I think the best thing he does is gain leverage on the defender. He just has a knack for knowing how to out-leverage a defender to make plays. Not a big separator, but reads the DB and out-leverages him to get open or open enough. And then the other stuff I had on him after I was watching him, has body control, yards after catch ability. He was a two-year captain on that team. He is a full-blown developmental prospect. I think he's like fifth, sixth round. I think that's where he kind of comes into the conversation.
Yeah, he's got the kind of physical traits that would set him apart. Now, his, like Brownie said, there's some things about him that, you know, on the field where you think, okay, he needs to do better here, do better there. But the guy's got the physical traits. He runs fast enough. He's big enough. He's strong enough. And if he's a two-year captain, he's got all the right, the DNA.
Yep.
That's why the Bills bring him
in. I mean, there's some Gabe Davis in Flournoy.
Right. They're going to get this guy. If he's there, you can bet that he's going to be one of, you know, he's going to be that Bills pick that is like the, you know, the 111 pick, 134 pick, and for sure the 165, 203 pick, one of those. I mean, it's going to be.
Separation is his biggest issue, which was also Gabe Davis's issue, to be quite frank.
Well, those are the wrong numbers I gave you, but he'll be in one of those.
He's a round four or round five guy, maybe even round six, depending on how the run on receivers goes on day two. Let's go to Luke in Rochester next. What's up, Luke?
Hey, Chris. I have a man crush too on Brian Thomas Jr. And,
join the club, buddy.
Steve, you definitely belong in the Hall of Fame. You are just an exceptional special teams player, pretty crucial receiver, too. Here's my take on Brian Thomas Jr. I think he's the best receiver. I think he's going to be better than Eric Moulds. I think he has exceptional body control, superior hands, and he has the best separation ability. I don't like Neighbors. I don't like Odunze. I don't even like Harrison. I don't know that he's not going to be drafted earlier. So the Bills have to actually move up to 12, 13, or 14, because I don't think the Colts are going to not deny Richardson that kind of talented player.
Yeah.
And then Just as an aside, I hope the Bills can somehow manage to draft either Ricky Pearsall or Tyler Rocker in later rounds, or even Fournier, like you guys discussed.
Yeah.
I'm going to be biting my nails tonight.
Yeah, we all are. Cross your fingers and toes, Luke. I'm sorry we got to run. We're up against the break here. I mean, like I said, a few weeks ago, everybody, the concern was Brian Thomas is going to go in the top 15. I'm not convinced the Colts are taking a receiver. They need corner help. And the latest buzz out of Indy is if they do take a receiver, it's going to be Xavier Worthy. So That's the scuttlebutt coming out of Indy right now. Could be a smokescreen. But they apparently are fascinated with Worthy's speed because they think, well, if we couple that with Anthony Richardson's rocket arm, we could have some very short scoring drives.
Right, right.
So,
listen, I like Brian Thomas Jr. too, but you put him up above Marvin Harrison Jr. and some of the, I don't know.
That's a little bit of a stretch.
That's a little bit stretch, a little bit much. I'm kind of with you, though. As much as we've been talking about this, we are going to know who this guy is that the Bills are going to take. If they stay at 28, they'll get a guy who's going to be pretty good. But there'll be a whoever it is when you get this far down. If he's the sixth, seventh, eighth wide receiver taken, there's going to be a lot of people, even in Bills fandom, they're going to be like, ah, I don't know. He's got, you know, he's going to have some question marks from this end. So, yeah, you're telling me Brian Thomas Jr. is going to be better than Eric Moulds? I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, let's pump the brakes on that one.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Got to take a break here. When we come back, hour number two, we'll begin with our friend Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports Draft and NFL Player Analyst. We'll go over his last mock draft with him when we return here on One Bills Drive, One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, hour number two on draft day. One Bills Live is the show. Thanks for joining us. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And also joining us at this time is CBS Sports Draft and NFL player analyst Chris Trapasso, who just released his last and final mock draft ahead of tonight's first round. And I am not going to reveal who he has going to the Bills at 28. I will let him do the honors. But Chris, good to have you. How you been?
I've been pretty good today. I'm all dressed up. It feels like a wedding day, so I wanted to come on this show. I know that there's half listeners, half viewers, but I wanted to wear a suit and tie because it's that festive of a day for me in this household.
Yeah, I would agree with you. We've been looking forward to it for a long time. And you're right. I mean, this is now every mock draft that we've seen and heard about for months is now obsolete after tonight. So give us an idea of what your last one was, what went into it.
A lot. So I first published it Wednesday, and then my editors let me make some tweaks. And this year I made more than just a few tweaks. I kind of redid the entire thing today because there's always that day of rumors and speculation and some reports that come out. We don't ultimately know if they're going to be true or not. I guess we'll find out in the next couple hours. Six or seven trades in the first round. I think we're going to maybe not see a bunch early, but beyond the ninth or tenth pick, I think a lot of different movement, teams going up and down the board. But ironically, I don't think the Bills are going to ultimately do that.
Okay.
All right.
So why don't you just kind of share who you had for the Bills and just your reasoning behind it.
Ladd McConkey, the wide receiver from Georgia. I do think Brandon Bean will make some calls, but it feels like there are a bunch of teams that need receiver. And anytime I tried to pinpoint a spot for the Bills to move up, whether it was, you know, way up to number 9 with the Bears or a team like the Colts at 15 or into the 20s, maybe at 20 with the Pittsburgh Steelers, I figured those teams probably need receivers too. And it's such a good class. We've talked about the depth for the last 4 months, but there's also a lot of premier top end talent. So in this draft, Brian Thomas goes way in front of the Bills, like 5 or 6 picks. Odunze, Neighbors, Marvin Harrison Jr., they're all off the board. And it sounds like a negative connotation to say they settle on Ladd McConkey, but I don't necessarily think that's the case. This is a wide receiver that we know can get open, that we know has been sneaky good after the catch in the SEC over multiple seasons. He's not a one-year wonder like a few of the other wide receivers in this class. He does have kind of small hands, but didn't really have any drop problems at Georgia. I think the character will be good, and the fact that he won on the outside, he was lined up there like 70 or almost 80% of the time in the SEC. You know he can probably win in the slot because of his quickness, but if the Bills need him to win on the perimeter, they could do that. A lot of movement in this offense in terms of pre-snap alignment. I think Ladd McConkey would just tick a lot of the boxes, can create explosive plays after the catch or just running by people with that 4.39 speed. So if the Bills don't ultimately move up, I think McConkey to me felt like the wide receiver in this class that could be there and would make sense to, again, tick a lot of those boxes for what it seems like they want at wide receiver.
So you think at this level, McConkey could be an outside receiver at the NFL? I mean, because that's really the question, right? I mean, he seems like he's a little bit redundant when you look at him and Khalil Shakir, but he can play. You think he can move outside?
Yeah, he's not very long, and so I do think some of those corners with those 32 and 33-inch arms, there's not quite as many of those anymore in the NFL, but they will give him some problems. But his release is off the line. Again, playing in the SEC, really the farm system league for the NFL, I think he's great at beating press coverage. The subtleties in his routes, I mean, you've had me say this, you guys have talked about it, you've had other analysts on to say, when it comes to route running subtleties and nuance and head fakes and shoulder fakes and changing speeds throughout the route and hitting double moves, Ladd McConkey, I think behind Marvin Harrison Jr., is the most squeaky clean route runner in this class. And again, he did it at Georgia, winning on the outside. So I would understand some redundancy, but I think the Bills want to move everyone around, have Shakir play on the outside sometimes and have Curtis Samuel in motion, starting in the slot and going to the perimeter. Dalton Kincaid moving around. So with McConkey, you do get more outside ability than I think people would like to think because he's a little bit of a smaller, quicker wide receiver. But I just think he has the complete package. The only concern I would have that I don't have all the information on is the medicals. He only caught 30 passes last year, and it wasn't because he wasn't productive. It was just because he had, you know, a few dings here and there. So if the medicals check out and the Bills see a bunch of receivers go off the board, the cost to trade up is too prohibitive, I think Ladd McConkey would make a lot of sense at 28.
Yeah, I try to use past history and Bean's preferences as somewhat of a guide. And I think more often than not, what we've witnessed him do is, in the first round anyway, take players with elite physical traits. And that's the only thing that gets me in the way of taking Ladd for the Bills at 28. The other question I wanted to ask you is, and we've seen this in late mocks here, late, you know, in the game, this week chiefly, Brian Thomas falling down the board. I mean, 2-3 weeks ago, he's going off the board at 12, 15 to the Colts, you know, 17 to the Jags. Now he is routinely in the 20s. You have him at 23 to the Rams after they moved down from 19. Your colleague Pete Prisco has Brian Thomas lasting all the way to the Bills at 28. Daniel Jeremiah in his last mock has Brian Thomas all the way down at 28. How likely do you think it is, Chris, that the competition and the fierce jockeying for position for offensive tackles and for quarterbacks could compromise the board in such a way that would favor Buffalo to have an opportunity like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a good sign for the Bills to potentially have more options, including Brian Thomas at 28, just based on what we've seen, like you said, in these kind of last-minute mock drafts, especially from the really plugged-in insiders that aren't mocking him at 15 to the Colts or at 12 to the Broncos anymore. There was a report that came out earlier this week that he has a little bit of a labrum issue, that not that this is something that should linger throughout his NFL career, but maybe the medicals could push him down the board a little bit. If Ladd McConkey or Brian Thomas, and I have them as my number three and number four wide receivers in this class, if they're available within striking distance or they get all the way to 28, I think Brandon Bean and that entire scouting staff there at One Bills Live would be ecstatic to be able to not have to trade the farm to get two players or one of two players that I think are elite talents that can be really good in this offense.
And you talk about this draft maybe setting records for the number of offensive players taken in the first round. Let's say it's not. Let's say there's only 17 or 18 offensive players. Just over half of the offensive of the picks turn out to be offensive players. The top, there are two sides of the ball, offense and defense, and it has been, and it is an arms race, we feel like, at least in the AFC at the top with Buffalo, with Baltimore, and of course Kansas City, and the rest. Are there enough defensive players who are really good to knock that number of offensive players taken off from 20 down to 18, 15 even?
Yeah, that's a good question, too. I don't think so in this class. We don't have a Tremaine Edmonds or a Roquan Smith or a Luke Kuechly linebacker. In some classes, we have a couple of them. We have Devin Lloyd and Devin Bush in 2019. 2020 had three linebackers go in the first round. We're not going to have that. The corners, there's really only two, Alabama's Terrion Arnold and Quinion Mitchell from Toledo. We maybe could see Kool-Aid McKinstry in the first round, maybe Nate Wiggins. He's really athletic from Clemson, but very spindly, like under 180 pounds. And even though we are seeing wide receivers get smaller and lighter, that is a very lightweight for a first round corner. And the defensive tackle class with Byron Murphy from Texas and Johnny Newton from Illinois, both really good players. And I think Byron Murphy is going to be probably a top half of the first round pick. But Johnny Newton didn't work out pre-draft. And I think it'll be hard for a GM to pull the trigger on him, not knowing what those testing numbers are. So usually we have a few linebackers, 4 to 6 corners. We have more defensive tackles, and the edge rusher group that you guys have certainly talked about a lot is a potential fallback option for the Bills. It's really only 4 players deep with Chop Robinson, Laiatu, Dallas Turner. So it's very difficult for the – and Jared Verse was the other one that I was forgetting. There's not as many blue-chip players at the variety of positions on defense. Like Chris was saying, on offense, there's quarterback, there's offensive tackle, there's wide receiver. It's very loaded at multiple spots, but that's just not the case on the defensive side in this class.
Your colleague at CBS Sports, your NFL insider, Jonathan Jones, was reporting that at the top of round 2, there could be a run on receivers early on day 2 with 5 of the top 7 picks, all teams that you could very easily see taking a receiver, especially if a couple of those teams do not take one in round 1, like in New England, for example, or some others. First question, what is the risk of one of those teams potentially leapfrogging the Bills, and how concerned do they have to be about that? And then B, how much could a run like that at the top of round 2 affect the Bills' options at pick 60? Where, you know, let's just say, God forbid, they have to take an edge rusher in round 1. Then the run on receivers happens at the top of round 2. What could the Bills be staring at pick 60 when they may absolutely positively have to find a receiver?
Well, to answer your first question, I do think the Bills will kind of have to be looking behind them to see, like, hey, we have the Panthers there at 33. They have an extra pick in the second round. The Washington Commanders are really loaded with those day 2 picks, and they seem, after they pick Jaden Daniels at 2, that they're going to want to load up. They lost Curtis Samuel to the Bills. They have Terry McLaurin, but they need more weapons for their young quarterback. The Patriots as well, they have some extra picks. So the Bills at 28, like, they have to make sure, yes, they need to make calls up to see, hey, is Brian Thomas falling? Is Roma Dunze? Is any wide receiver falling in the range that is reasonable for the Bills? But also have to keep in mind that those teams are very hungry for wide receivers. So that is a distinct possibility. I don't think it's incredibly likely, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility at all. And in terms of your second question, that is the one issue that I would have with not going receiver in the first round. It could be something where a draft where the Bills could look and say, oh, okay, all these teams picking first 5 to 10 picks in round 2, probably not going to pick receiver. But that's not the case, as you just outlined, Chris. So many teams need wide receivers, and guys like Xavier Leggett and Ricky Pearsall and Keon Coleman could suddenly be off the board. And then, like I've kind of talked about during this pre-draft process, the class is very good, a lot of high-end, top-end talent. But in terms of like premier depth to get a future number one, the Bills would be taking a big risk to not pick one at 28, or maybe after a small trade back, and then hoping that their guy gets all the way to 60. I think most teams in the NFL today know how important wide receiver is to their team, regardless of who they already have and just how much top-end talent there is at that position in this draft class.
Are we overreacting to the thought process? And we see it everywhere. People are expecting tons and tons of trades at the top of this draft. They still don't know how many quarterbacks in the top 5. Do you think we're – you know, are we like overhyping this, or do you really expect to be there a ton of movement at the top of this, or are we just kind of making it up as we go along here? I mean, a lot of drafts, they sound like there's going to be a ton of movement stuff. Maybe you get one, and if it's a big year, maybe you get two. you know, but it rarely happens. Do you expect that to change?
I don't think so. So I think tonight we're not going to see a lot at the top of the draft. It kind of feels like solidifying that the Patriots are going to stay put at three, unless they're just trying to drive the price for that pick up. But I think whether it's Drake May, and it seems most likely it's going to be him from North Carolina to the Patriots, or it's J.J. McCarthy, that they're just going to stick and pick. But like I mentioned earlier, I think outside of the top 10, teams like the Saints that need an offensive tackle, that hope to get maybe the second or third offensive tackle off the board, they could trade up, because there is kind of it's a barren cornerback class at the top, that there could be a team like the Philadelphia Eagles looking to trade up for a corner, things like that. I think we'll see maybe not as many trade ups for quarterbacks as normal, but maybe outside of that, the non-quarterback positions, literally from pick 10 all the way until the Bills pick at 28, I wouldn't be surprised if there's three or four trades, just because there's just not as many defensive top tier talent as there normally is.
Last one for you, Chris. We know Latu with the neck is a medical yellow flag, if not a medical red flag for some teams. But he's considered by many to be the best pure pass rusher in the draft. How do you think the clubs in this league fare with him in round one? I mean, he's going to be a first-round pick, but the risk is there, and teams don't like messing with neck injury guys sometimes. So where do you think he ultimately lands? Because we've seen him as high as 12 and 11 and as low as 24, 25.
I think probably closer to the top 10 than closer to where the Bills pick. You're right that teams definitely, especially when you're investing a first round pick, you don't want to have a lot of those red flags, whether it's a character concern or in this case with him, a past neck injury. Starting at the combine and through the draft, asking around the few sources that I have in the league, a lot of them mentioned to me that, look, he played the last two seasons, didn't have any problems with it. This was in his past. It's kind of like Jalen Phillips there of the Miami Dolphins, who started at UCLA, ironically, had a neck injury, medically retired from football, goes to Miami, and he's a 16th pick in the draft. So I feel like with Latu and Jalen Phillips, similar size, similar pass rush polish and athleticism, like you mentioned, there is just too much to pass up in terms of overall skill set, high floor and high upside. And again, this is not something that is lingering. He's not going to miss time in training camp. He wasn't hampered by this last season. I think Latu's game really translates well to the NFL, because he can beat blockers in a variety of ways.
All right, Chris, thanks much for the time. Chris, we appreciate it. Your Christmas day is finally here. Enjoy it.
Yes. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
all
Chris.
Right, that's Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports Draft and NFL player analyst, joining us. Also known as a fill-in host on this fair show when either Steve or I are on vacation at times. But we want to get back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board, as we have open lines for you there, asking you today on draft day, who is your player for the Bills and how are they going to get him? Does Brandon Bean have to make a move to get your guy? You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We go to Mark in West Seneca next. What's up, Mark? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good.
Everybody's excited. My guy, for the longest time, I've just had this feeling that I'm with Chris, that we're going to end up with McConkey. And I think we're going to end up with him just by sitting where we're at. And what I wanted to point out was, as exciting and, you know, everybody wants the best talent, highest talent, all that. And as exciting as it is to try and move up and all that, you know, Brandon repeatedly every year says we want to be competitive every year. We want to take a shot at it every year. And if we really believe about our team what we say all the time, as in we have a great coaching staff that can develop talent, and, you know, the bottom line, the ace in the hole is obviously Josh. He should be able to make receivers better. When you look at this class, once you get past the top three, I don't believe there's that much difference in talent when you go from Mitchell and Thomas down to maybe the next five guys. And if the Bills look at the overall roster that they have, they need to really influx this roster with youth and talent. And that means all the way through the draft, this year and next. So I'm more inclined to say, hold your water, sit at 28. If Thomas or Mitchell are, say, 22, 23, make a small move up if you can without giving up too much in assets to go get it then. But if not, hold your water and take who's ever there who you truly believe in. And absolutely do not touch next year's number one or either one of those number twos, because I believe you're going to need that influx of top-end talent to rebuild our defense next year.
What receiver would you, Mark, what would receiver would be there if to take instead of McConkey? What if Brian Thomas Jr. and A.D. Mitchell are both there?
I'm thinking my scenario is either McConkey or Leggett. That's who I think they should go for.
Okay.
You know,
so you put
Xavier
Leggett
Levitt
and McConkey ahead of A.D. Mitchell and
Brian Thomas Jr.
He doesn't expect him to be there.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right. If Mitchell or Thomas are there at 22, 23, go get one of them.
Yeah,
go
so
get
you
one.
Think, so you think there's going to be at least five receivers gone by the time it gets to Buffalo?
I would think so. Okay. If they sit at 28 and don't make a move up the board, yeah. I can't see any of those top five being there.
Yeah, I
just can't see that happening.
Yeah, that might be the magic number. You get five wide receivers off the board by the time it gets to 28. You're gonna have to figure out what you're gonna do. And the problem is, you said, hey, you get the guy you really believe in. What if there's nobody you really believe in when you get to 28? That's the nightmare scenario.
Yeah. To Ryan in Toronto next. What's up, Ryan?
Chris, Steve, honestly, man, I just don't see the value or the point of trading up and giving all these assets for one player. I honestly think we should double dip, trade down, and get two receivers. And you know what? Hope for the best, and we hit one of them. Instead of trading up and giving up all these assets, first round, second round, I just don't see the value of doing this, to be honest.
Okay.
I just want to hear your thoughts.
Would it change your mind, Ryan, if I told you that it's widely anticipated there's going to be a run on receivers at the top of round two, and you would be dropping yourself right into the middle of that, maybe even on the back end of that, and you're going back to a place where you thought you might get to pick from a pool of the 7th to 12th best receivers in the class, and by the time it gets to you, now it's receiver 12. Does that change your mind at all?
I see where you're coming from, Chris. To be honest, man, like I'm looking at the long run picture. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I understand you may have draft cap next season, but I just don't see the investment moving up, giving up all these future picks for one dude. That's what I'm saying.
Right. I get it. It's hard
Ryan's
to do.
Ryan's getting agitated. I love it.
I agree with you, Ryan. Here's the thing, Ryan. I giving up like three picks to move up and get a guy, I get it. The guy might be good, really. But on the other end of the spectrum, and I'm not saying this will happen, it'd be very difficult, all three of the guys you give up could be great picks. And certainly, we know this almost without a doubt, there will be three guys on the board at all three of those picks that will be great pros. And you may not be able to recognize them. That's the problem, right? You may not know who they are yet. But there's fifth rounders, sixth rounders, seventh rounders in every NFL draft that turn out to be, wow, that guy's a really good player. And you're giving up three chances to get one of those guys. Yeah. Just to get one guy who you think is probably going to be one of those guys too. And for good reason.
Well,
and he
maybe
may be
more than that.
Maybe more of a sure thing, okay? But you're giving up three other swings at the draft I don't know. It's hard to get your mind around giving up those opportunities.
I will tell you, Ryan, I would agree with you on a giant move up the board. I am against it. I don't believe it's worth it. But if they got to move up three or four spots to get the guy that's sliding or in a place where they didn't think he would even get to on the board, I am in favor of that. Brandon Bean has done that with remarkable success in the past. So I wouldn't be opposed to him doing a small move that gives up limited capital You know, you move up three spots and you give up a four and a six, or maybe even just a four. I'm okay with that. That's what he did to get Kyrie Elam. He got rid of his fourth round pick, moved up two spots. And look, I know Kyrie Elam hasn't panned out on the field yet, but just hold on. Let's see what happens this year. I'm in favor of a move like that. Small move, limited capital going out the door, where you have a ton of day three capital anyway. That's the kind of move that that I would be in favor of.
I'm there too. I just think the more picks you have, the better chance you have to get better. And whether this guy is a wide receiver, an edge rusher, or whatever, he's going to be an extremely good player, and he's going to have some traits that are going to be developed by this coaching staff. So I think they're going to get a wide receiver, but if they don't, it's not going to be the end of the world, because I have probably a little bit more faith in the guys in the room already than most people do, for whatever reason. I still think that's their priority, but I don't think it's all or nothing with this 28th pick. I don't think this first round is the one pick in the current moment of Buffalo Bills history that's going to pivot the franchise. Those guys are already here. Josh is already here. You know, all these guys are, you know, Kincaid, Shakir, Milano, Taron Johnson. Those guys are all in the building already. This draft pick, while he's a cherry on top of the cake for me. It'd be great. But I don't think the pressure on this guy is to be the franchise-changing thing that's going to put us over that proverbial mythical hump. I don't think that's this guy. It'd be great to get one, but I don't think that's this guy. I don't think this pick is that guy because of the quarterback.
We have to take a break. Nothing but your phone calls, though. When we return, Bob in South Carolina will lead us off. When we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, right back to the phones we go here on One Bills Live on draft day. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, asking you, who is your pick for the Bills in round one, and how do they get him? To Bob in South Carolina we go next. What's up, Bob?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
8 o'clock can't come fast enough.
Right.
I'm in the same camp as a lot of other people to stay at 28. But it may be a small trade-up, but I have to wonder, because – how important medicals are. Will that cause maybe Thomas and Mitchell to fall?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, probably it does. A little bit.
Well, if it does cause them to fall, then you may not have to give up any draft capital to make that happen. But if they're gone, I think you still got guys like Leggett. You got Cooper DeJean. You got Newton. I think Latu will be gone by that point in time. But I think there's still a possibility at 28 we could get who we want.
All right. Fair enough, Bob. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I'll say, it's interesting.
Yeah, so Brian Thomas with his shoulder injury, it's not deemed as a giant deal, but I think we have to remember there are 32 teams with 32 different medical staffs who are all going to have differing opinions on the severity of the shoulder problem. There might be some teams that believe he's just got to manage it. He'll be able to get through his rookie season fine. There are others that say, well, if we draft this kid, we may have to have him get cleanup surgery in his shoulder. That's going to slow down his development and his availability potentially for the start of the 2024 season. We're going to knock him down a full round for that. You don't know where 32 teams are coming down on him and the severity of the shoulder injury, but it could be enough that he does slide down into striking distance for the Bills. And if I'm Buffalo, I'm doing it, because it's a fortuitous situation that has fallen in your lap. And if you have to slow down his time on the field in the early going for what you're going to get long term, I think it's worth it. The Mitchell thing's a little different because he's a type 1 diabetic.
Yeah, Mitchell's going to have an ongoing issue that should not be career threatening, but it's like Brownie said, it may put Mitchell, it may put it, you know, worthy, Xavier Worthy, Xavier Leggett, Ladd McConkey may put, for some teams, put one or two of those or all three of them ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. or A.D. Mitchell because of, you know, the medicals. So it may shuffle the order that they like them. They're still going to like them, but they also understand there's an issue there. So it may do that. They're not going to drop off the face of the earth, but they may fall a couple of picks. They may fall from one team who says, no, when, in that case, we're going to put this guy ahead of him, to another team who says, no, we'll take him.
Yeah. And we'll have to see how that unfolds tonight. But, yeah, it could be pretty fortuitous for the Bills if some teams decide they don't want to take the risk. To Jerry and Tonawanda next. What do you got for us, Jerry?
Hey, first off, Steve, yes, I am retired. I have a great life, and I have a lot of time on my hands. having said that, probably Beam, their coaching staff, and myself were the only ones ever that wanted Josh Allen. And Beam did his magic, and he got him. And he's going to do his magic once again, and you can put this on the whiteboard. Beam is going to move up to number 19 with the Rams and get Brian Thomas if Thomas is there. Because there's rumors saying that the Chiefs, they need a number one, and they want Brian Thomas, and they want to move up into the Rams' 19th spot. So he's got to work his magic to beat the Kansas City's GM to get that spot. And I believe Beam will sweeten it, and we will get Brian Thomas at number 19. Put it on the whiteboard. Let's go.
All right, Jerry. All right. Thanks for the call. That is it's a sizable move. A little bit more than I was hoping the Bills would have to make.
Yeah, to get to 19, they'll have to give up their 60th, too. That's the kind of value you're talking about. They'd have to give up number one, number 28 and number 60, and that would get them up to number
more than do it.
17. That's by the value. So the Rams would do that in a heartbeat. And maybe they throw back. Maybe they throw back.
Give them back a six or something.
A six, not a four. They couldn't give back a fourth because that's too much, or two.
They could give six or
maybe
five.
A six or a four or three, even a low three. So we'll see. But maybe. That's it. That's what you're talking about. You're giving up two players to get one. You'd give up 28 and number 60 or value like that, and you'd get your guy. Now you could give up this year's one, and maybe the Rams take next year's two, one of two, one of the twos you have next year. Maybe they do that, and you can get away with just trading one for one in this draft. I might think about doing that, but I don't know that the Rams would.
Yeah, but it's like I said earlier in the show, between the teams that are receiver needy at the top of round two and San Francisco and Kansas City at 30 and 31, Bills are going to have to watch their back as much as they're watching what's happening in front of them on the board. To Tom and Lackawanna next, what do you got for us, Tom?
Yeah, guys, I agree with, you know, worrying about teams in the high seconds moving up. So, or Frisco and Kansas City. So I would say, you know, probably move up to 22. Hopefully the Eagles, they like to move, will want to do it. If not, then I think Dallas, with having to sign... redo Dak and sign Lamb and Micah are looking for more picks, so I would think they'd want to move down. And then Buffalo's advantage is all the people that want to jump ahead of them are below them, so they would want Buffalo's 28 rather than going down further. So
yeah.
I'm hoping, you know, if Thomas is there, great. If not, I think Mitchell should still be there, and they should get him at either 22 or 24.
All right. I don't mind that thinking, Tom. I think it's going to be harder to convince Philadelphia to move out there at 22, only because they're looking to move up, according to all the reports. They are really desperate for a corner. There are really only three corners that are considered elite in this class. That's basically Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, and the third one is slipping my mind right now, but... there's three that are considered top of the class. There are others who could go late in round one, like Kool-Aid McKinstry and maybe a couple of others. But word is Philly's looking to move up from 22. To get them to move back might prove difficult. I think you can get Dallas to slide back. They want an offensive tackle. So depending on what's left on the board, like, for example, if there are still two or three defensive or offensive tackles that they like, still on the board. I could see them sliding back four spots to 28, knowing that Green Bay might need one. I'm looking at Green Bay, Tampa, and Arizona right now, and I'm thinking, man, do they need tackles? You can make an argument that everybody needs an offensive tackle, but that might be tough to pry them loose too. They might want to stay there and get the tackle.
I mean, we don't know who's willing and not willing to move out. If all these teams that need a tackle, you can think.
I'm telling you, there's going to be frenzied movement for tackles.
But there's so many tackles available, it's just as likely the team will move from 8 or 9 or 7 all the way back to 15 and still feel like they can get a guy that can play.
And well, it's different between moving from 8 to 15 in terms of what's left on the board than from 22 to 28. It might dry up fast if there's a run.
Sure, sure. That's true.
And
that's
there is a drop-off at tackles. After, like, receivers, we're talking about, you can get a decent player in round 3. Tackle?
Not so much.
There's a drop-off after that 8th or 9th guy.
Maybe. But there's not going to be 8 or 9 guys gone by. They're not going to be 8 or 9 offensive tackles in the first round. Think about that.
I think they're going to be 6. Maybe.
But
six,
but that's not 8 or 9.
Maybe 7.
That's not 8 or 9. Plus, if you get the same margin of error that they always have where one team has 3 different players in their top 6 tackles than that other team. They don't. They do. They got half the guys in their top tackles are different than half the guys in their other team's top 6 tackles.
Yeah.
They got 3 different names. So, given that, there's not going to be 9 tackles taken in the first round, but there's going to be 9 tackles who are going to be playing on NFL teams out of this class. You know what I'm saying? So you're going to get a guy. So you might get a guy like Tennessee at 7. They may move back to 15 or whenever, mid-teens, and pick up another handful of picks. And certainly they'll move back. If they move back into the to 28, they'll pick up 5 guys. It'll take that many picks to get up there from that distance. So, and they'll still get a good tackle. You know what I mean? So that's a big thing. If you're taking an offensive tackle in this draft, dude, what are you waiting on? Get out of there, get more picks, and still get a guy.
Yeah, but I think if they really covet a guy that's still on the board right there, they might just take him.
Listen, let's face it. Every team has like 10 guys they covet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a receiver. It's a quarterback. It's a offensive tackle. They all do, but the Bills don't need them.
Right.
You know, and that's it. So there's a ton of players up there that every team covets at every position because they're really good players. I'm telling you, man, if I'm taking a tackle in this draft, I'm trading down, not up.
Got to take a break. Try to squeeze a call in. When we come back here on One Bills Live, stay with us. All right, last segment here on One Bills Live on draft day. Want to remind you that Matty Glavin and myself will be streaming live on the Bills' social media channels as well as the YouTube channel, Facebook page, once the pick is in. So after the Bills make their first-round pick tonight, tune in to the Bills' social channels. Matty and I will be on breaking down the pick with Greg Cosell, and we'll have the live coverage of Brandon Bean's press conference after the pick is made. But, Steve, what's going to happen tonight with the Bills?
I think the Bills are going to take a wide receiver. I think it'll be somewhere right around 28. I don't think they'll be able to trade up far enough to get Brian Thomas Jr., so I think they're going to take A.D. Mitchell. And I think A.D. Mitchell will be a Buffalo Bill this time tomorrow.
I was on the Brian Thomas bandwagon early. I will stay there until the end. I am hopeful that they can make a small move up the board because he is sliding. My area where I think they will land is Green Bay at 25, and I think that is where they will land Brian Thomas. Cross your fingers, cross your toes, and anything else you can cross. If they stay put, though, Steve, I'm in agreement with you. I think A.D. Mitchell is more likely. That is it for us. Enjoy the draft tonight. We'll be here to break it down tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We'll see you then.